It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Janice Dean.
I'm Jason Chaffetz.
I'm Harris Faulkner. And this is the Fox News Rundown.
Thursday, March 28th, 2024. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. Some law enforcement brass across the country are trying to hire more civilian employees and shift where officers and detectives are deployed, or even when they work, as police and sheriff's departments grapple with a growing shortage of law enforcement officers.
We have one shift that's over-resourced and one shift that's under-resourced. So how do we start being a responsible manager of personnel and ensuring that when we're the busiest, we have a majority of our officers working?
I'm Dave Anthony. It's opening day in baseball for most major league teams. But the season starts with a big betting controversy.
There's no doubt gambling could threaten sports integrity. We have to be able to watch the games and believe that the outcome is the product, the unpredictable product of two teams or two individuals pitting their merit against one another.
And I'm Joe Concha. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Earlier this week, a 31-year-old NYPD officer was killed after confronting two men in a vehicle. One opened fire, both suspects had lengthy records, and one had more than 20 arrests. The other had served 10 years in prison for attempted murder. Eric Adams is the mayor of New York, former officer himself.
It is the good guys against the bad guys. This is what you call not a crime problem, a recidivist problem. Same bad people doing bad things to good people. Less than a year, he's back on the streets with another gun.
The dangerous nature of police work and whether suspects are prosecuted may be a factor in our national police shortage. In city police and county sheriff's departments across the country, there are fewer and fewer officers and deputies. There may be new recruits graduating each year, but it's not enough to make up for the retirements. Recently, Fox 45 in Baltimore reported that at one point there were just 3 officers patrolling the city's Southern Police District for a population of 61,000. Betsy Smith is with the National Police Association.
The reason that 9 out of every 10 police departments in this country is short-staffed is because we have been dealing with, here in the United States, this 3.5, almost 4-year vilification and demonization of the American law enforcement officer.
Now, the president of the Austin Police Association in Texas, Michael Bullock, told Fox 26 their shortage makes them reshuffle which officer is where, often shortchanging important work.
Our homicide detectives, who should be being able to devote all of their energy towards these critical cases to make sure that we solve, they're having to go work backfill. On a regular basis, they have to come back to patrol to take 911 calls.
Some cities are hiring more civilians to do administrative work, and some are adjusting when officers work, matching personnel assigned to shifts that typically receive the most calls.
We started to look at data analytics and when our call volumes were the most and when our call volumes were the least.
Larry Scarrato is the chief of police in Pittsburgh.
We determined from 3 a.m. to 7 a.m. that our call volume was right around 8%, and that from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. our call volume was right around 60%. So we had 33% of our staff working from 3 in the morning to 7, and 33% of our staff working from 2P to 2A. So we started making evaluations on, we have one shift that's over-resourced and one shift that's under-resourced. So how do we start being a responsible manager of personnel and ensuring that when we're the busiest, we have a majority of our officers working, and when we're not, that we have the appropriate amount of officers that, one, keep the officers safe, and to keep our community safe. And that's how and what caused or prompted the change. Like, for the first time, our department has used data analytics to inform staffing.
It sounds like you're saying this is essentially a math game and a time management game, and you're just putting people where they're needed more. But the reaction has not been there. There's been some reaction. What have you sensed from the reaction in your city?
The reaction is that we were taking, like, we've quit policing overnight, and that's just inaccurate. It's an unfair assessment of what we do. We still respond to in-progress calls. I think there was even conversation in some of the media that we determined what emergency calls we were going to respond to. Well, that's incorrect. We would respond to all in-progress calls as if we would on any other time or day. When the call does not necessitate an officer to be physically present, then we refer them to the telephone reporting unit, and we're expanding our technology to have online reporting as well, so that we're utilizing the resources that we have available to us in a real meaningful and responsible way. So that was the challenge that we faced, is that, you know, I'm hearing, well, we don't respond to X call, we don't respond to this emergency, we pick and choose which ones we want. No, the true reality is, if it's in progress, I use the analogy if the difference between you come home in your garage and you see your lawnmower stolen and dial 911, that is not in progress. We would refer that to telephone reporting. If you came home or you opened up your window, looked out your window, somebody was stealing your lawnmower out of your yard, that is in progress. We would respond to it as we would in the past. And so it's like just understanding of what we're doing, because it's different from what we've done in the past.
It sounds like you're saying the how is the analytics, right? You're doing some time management. But I imagine a part of this is that you guys are suffering, like most departments, with officer staffing shortages. I was reading, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that y'all are down to 740 officers, and ideally that'd be closer to 900. Why do you think it's so hard to find people to do police work?
You know, we have 767 officers total, okay, like from me to our newest hire. And in that, we were at one point pre-pandemic, 980 some odd officers. So we've seen such a significant decrease over 200, and that impacts any organization in a real way. The reality of it is we hadn't hired in a few years. When I was appointed chief, we began class almost immediately, and then we added a second one that we weren't anticipating, but we knew to outpace departures that we were going to have rapid hiring over the next course of probably the next 3 years to catch up, just to keep pace with our retirement departures. And the true reality is there aren't as many people interested in this profession that would have been in the past, especially when I started, and they're for various reasons. I don't know if our profession does the greatest job of marketing itself, recruiting in that space, right? And oftentimes we allow the national media to inform what others should think about this profession and not advocate for it in a way that impacts a new potential hire. We have some pretty rigorous physical fitness standards. And for example, you know, I have a class that's in right now. We process 161 candidates for that class, and 104 of them failed the physical fitness exam. So
wow.
We can't, right? So we're going into now.
Well, the Army's dealing with a similar issue, right? In terms of police recruitment and Army recruitment, I'm sure there's some Venn diagram overlap here. I mean,
right. Very, very similar person, right? We're probably looking at the same individual a lot of the times. And in that, there are people that come unprepared for the battery of exam, the battery of physical requirements that will be presented to them on that date. So we've had to structure in a way in which we recruit to inform them what the process is going to be, to start mentoring and coaching, very similar to what the military does from the day they pass the test, so that at least if I have 161 applicants, that they're all viable to get into the academy. I can run any specific class with about 70 new recruits, and I have 17. So I can't, based on what candidates are available to me, outpace departures.
Talk to me, though, about the danger of police work, right? Because it's that's something you have to be, you have to be up for that, and most aren't. And this week, New York Mayor Adams said that after this 31-year-old NYPD officer was killed, that they have a recidivism problem, that these suspects in this case had lengthy criminal records. And he said that they have a recidivism problem, the same bad people doing the same bad things. Is Mayor Adams right? And what do you think needs to shift there?
Right. We've challenged at times, and we do it often here as well, like the judiciary and these outcomes that are allowing those that have shown a clear clear intention of causing harm in our society, not receiving the appropriate penalties, and how that makes our cities unsafe. You know, our officers will do their job, but we have and only influence one part of the judicial process, and that's at arrest. And we don't have and cannot influence it above us. So it's important that we challenge those that sit in those spaces to have and take the same level of responsibility that our police officers are in ensuring that we're not identifying and highlighting those that are committing minor offenses. Like, we're talking about people that create real harm in our community, and they have to be treated with that level of intention. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes they are not, or the system just doesn't catch up with them before they've done so much harm. And so that's what we're practicing, an approach that we're bringing to the district attorney's office, and we're bringing to our judges, is like, hey, we're identifying specific people that are creating tremendous harm, and we ask you to treat them with the level of attention they deserve.
Chief, are we less safe with fewer officers? Like, is there a threshold of minimum officers you could see having on staff after which you'd call things unsafe?
No, this city is safe with the number of officers we have. What it's challenged or forced me to do is what I suggest we were prior to my arrival was a concierge police department. And that means anytime you call 911, no matter the circumstances, no matter what the issue was, we would send police. I'm suggesting with the number of officers we have today, we can't offer that level of response to anything. So let's focus on what really matters to our community, what I hear our community challenging us on, and that's, do we impact safety in a way? Do we focus on violent crime, specifically violent gun violence? And I can check the box yes to that. We've decreased homicides by 27%. We have decreased non-fatal shootings by 18%. We have solved 76% of our murders. We have recovered over 465 guns in a calendar year last year. We are doing our part toward that goal. The next one is that, are we community engaged with our community police partnerships? Check, yes. But are we focusing on community quality of life issues? Check. Are we
what about hiring more civilians? What about, because a lot of that seems to be a trend now, is more departments relying on more civilians to do some other kinds of work and free officers up?
Right. And that's also objective. I took six officers off of desk duty because I need those six officers not answering telephones, but answering calls for service. Right. And we have been a little slower in that space. And we continue to push for whenever I've been of the mindset from the time I was young, that when I want officers, they're trained, carrying firearms, well-equipped to deal with those calls that should require a firearm and their level of training to respond to. And when we can't, that we hire civilians to sit in those administrative responsibilities to free up those resources. And that's, I think, what a lot of police departments are facing today is that transition, that shift from officers occupying administrative roles to civilians occupying administrative roles and allowing cops to do the jobs that we train them to do.
Chief Larry Scrivato, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
This is Joe Concha with your Fox News commentary coming up.
This is the time baseball fans wait for all winter. Opening day is here for almost all the major league teams, but this season, the focus isn't just on the cracking of the bat or the snapping of the mitt. It's the placing of the bet.
I never bet on baseball or any other sports, or never have asked somebody to do it on my behalf.
That was Los Angeles Dodgers star Shohei Ohtani through a new interpreter on Monday, making his first public denial in a gambling controversy Major League Baseball is investigating involving his old interpreter.
Ipe has been stealing money from my account and has told lies.
Ipe Mizuhara was fired by the Dodgers last week after LA's season opener in South Korea, a win over the San Diego Padres. Mizuhara initially told ESPN he had a gambling problem, racking up debts with an illegal bookie who was under federal investigation. That probe turned up $4.5 million in payments from Ohtani to that bookie. Mizuhara said Ohtani agreed to cover his losses. Well, the next day, Ohtani's lawyers said that's a lie, alleging Mizuhara stole the money making the transfers himself. But many questions remain unanswered as the Dodgers' season resumes today for Ohtani against the St. Louis Cardinals, at a time when sports gambling revenue keeps surging, up 45% last year alone to nearly $11 billion.
There's no doubt gambling could threaten sports integrity.
Will Kane is a co-host of Fox & Friends Weekends on the Fox News Channel and hosts The Will Kane Show at 12 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com. Available on demand every day at willkaneshow.com.
We have to be able to watch the games and believe that the outcome is the product, the unpredictable product of two teams or two individuals pitting their merit against one another. It's one of the few areas of society left where the outcome is unpredictable. And it is truly a meritocracy. May the best man win. But that's being perverted and destroyed across the landscape of sports. Obviously, there are those that believe the NFL, I think this is somewhat conspiratorial and, you know, resides largely in the rabbit hole of the internet, but some that believe the NFL is scripted in its outcomes. My argument for the fact that it's not scripted is, surely they would script the Dallas Cowboys into the Super Bowl. But if you don't believe the outcome is unpredictable and may the best man win, then you lose the very nature of fandom.
The Shohei Ohtani story, it broke as the Dodgers season was just getting underway in Korea. He, of course, is new to the team. He's the biggest star in baseball, $700 million contract. And all of a sudden, there are people who do not, and a lot of people who do not believe his story that his interpreter, fired by the Dodgers, was the one doing the gambling. Ohtani's got a lot of questions that he has not cleared up yet for a lot of people, I don't think.
Count me among those that do not believe the story from Shohei Ohtani. It doesn't make sense that a bookie would take $4.5 million of bets from a guy that made $300,000 a year. That's what was paid to the interpreter, Ippei Matsuhara, by the teams that are employing Shohei Ohtani. It doesn't add up that Ohtani's story changed within 24 hours, where originally it's like, oh, we covered the bets. He didn't bet, but the interpreter bet, and Ohtani covered the bets. And it also doesn't add up in how they were treating Ippei Matsuhara, because there's video of Ohtani yucking it up with him in a dugout an hour before he accuses him of massive theft. Ohtani's camp continued to trust the translator as his sole source of information and conduit to Shohei Ohtani, from his agencies to his managers, trust him, while at the same time they were supposedly suspecting him of massive theft. The way they treated him is like a trusted confidant ready to be a fall guy. They didn't treat him like a suspect.
Now, the other issue that people have with this story, it's not so simple as to just go to the bank and say, I'd like to transfer all this money. There are a lot of steps, and I think a lot of people wonder, someone of Ohtani's wealth has to have some accountant, somebody managing his money. It just can't be the interpreter doing everything.
The richer you get, the more people are involved in your finances. Lawyers, accountants, bank managers, managers are all involved in some way in understanding your financial situation, because they have a stake, a financial interest in your financial situation. It belies belief that the only man who had oversight of Shohei Ohtani's finances was his interpreter, who would be capable of wiring out $500,000 increments over, who knows, 5 to 10 different stages over some given period of time without alerting anyone in the orbit of Shohei Ohtani.
Well, there's also authentication you have to do to get wire transfers approved by banks.
You would assume, right. I don't know what power of attorney, and I don't know if Ippei Matsuhara had power of attorney when it comes to Shohei Ohtani. And I'm not a banking expert, but my understanding is the same as yours, that, you know, double verification. Ohtani's name was on the wires. I don't know that he had to sign any documents. But yeah, the simple logistics of wiring that amount of money that many times, again, it's hard to believe one random employee of a very high net worth individual would be able to abscond at least $4.5 million.
Of course, Shohei Ohtani
is a huge name. He's the wealthiest guy, richest contract in Major League Baseball history. He was clean up until this moment. He may still be clean. He might be telling the entire truth that he didn't bet on anything. But Pete Rose, who was banned from baseball for gambling, says he wishes he had an interpreter because he'd be scot-free.
Yeah, exactly. Pete Rose said, I just wish I had thought about that in the 60s and 70s. All I needed was an interpreter. You know, but I do think this takes us back to the beginning of the conversation. And I think this is a scandal. And it's most likely a violation that still needs to be proven. These are allegations. But even if proven true, does anyone really care? Because what it reflects is Shohei Ohtani, like the People magazine used to publish, celebrities, stars, they're just like us. So he's gambling, just like us. The only way I think that people end up caring is if an investigation shows that Ohtani was betting on baseball. And I would even say there are some that won't even care if he bets on baseball unless he bets on games that he's involved in and it affected his performance.
But he might know information as a player about other teams or other players on other teams that investors wouldn't know, that other bettors wouldn't know, right? So he could have inside information if he's betting on a game that the Dodgers aren't involved in.
No doubt about it. That's a great point. And I want to be clear. I'm not giving you should or shouldn't. I'm not saying that people shouldn't care whether or not Shohei Ohtani was gambling. What I'm trying to do is tell you what I think is, what I think people out there actually, in the end, care about this story. And I think gambling, and you started this very broadly, I think gambling at this point is so integrated and so widespread in sports. And it's not necessarily something that I endorse because, you know, this is the nature of conservatism versus progressivism when it comes to society or any aspect of our culture. The rate of change should be done with humility. That's happening in college football, NIL, transfer portal. Okay, great. You think you're making changes for a more utopic, justice-based future.
Right, it gives the athletes the money they believe they deserve, right? It shouldn't
just
be
people make the argument, but you don't know the mechanics of which you're messing with. You're inside the Swiss watch messing with the gears. And when it comes to, yes, what we just talked about with college sports or integrating gambling, even if it was there behind the scenes before illegally, integrating it legally and making it accessible to everyone is going to have unintended consequences. We are messing with the gears of sports at an incredibly rapid pace. And we have to have some humility to say, we don't know how this is going to shake out in the end. Will it ruin the integrity of the sport? Perhaps. Will it create a world full of gambling addicts? Perhaps. What will be the end result? And we have to be able to say, I don't know, but it may not just be utopia.
Betting on sports goes far beyond just the results of games. People wager on player performance, too. Just yesterday, the NCAA president proposed a ban on so-called prop bets on college players. Bets like that have an NBA player being investigated by the league. Jonte Porter with the Toronto Raptors. Related to wagers placed on how many points or rebounds or three-point shots he'd take in a game. Porter is not a star NBA player, but ESPN reports some of the prop bets on his performances in recent weeks were the number one money winners in the entire NBA those nights.
This really indicts the integrity of the game. If what he's doing on the floor isn't unpredictable and isn't pitting two men, may the best man win, then we're not watching the nature of sports. And so that indicts the integrity of the game. If Jonte Porter was shaving points, winning prop bets, he's doing something other than trying to win the game, which is the reason the fan is there in the first place.
And he's not the only. I know that there are other players. There was a player in the NHL suspended. There were three Detroit Lions suspended for supposedly gambling on NFL games. And there are Calvin Ridley spent a year away from the NFL for gambling as well. So is the answer, in your opinion, that NFL, NBA, all these major sports shouldn't gamble at all or just on their sport? What do you think will end up being the case?
I think the end rule is that you can't gamble on your sport. I don't think I or anyone else cares if Jonte Porter places bets on the NFL. I don't care if Shohei Ohtani was placing bets on the English Premier League of soccer. But if they were gambling on their sports, and I would say you have to draw a hard line, you have to draw a bright line. And it can't just be, well, I wasn't betting on a game I was involved in. I think not in your sport whatsoever has to be the bright line. And if you're a gambler, you know, that should be a perfectly acceptable line. Like, Jontay Porter gets to be like everybody else. He can gamble if he wants on something he's not involved in, but he doesn't get to indict the integrity of the NBA.
Does Major League Baseball run the risk if they don't, if it's not appear that they investigate Shohei Ohtani exhaustively enough that they're giving him a pass as a star player?
Yes, absolutely. And he is. We should probably put that into context for everyone. This is the best player in baseball. This is a guy on the path to having a conversation about one of the best players ever. And so the incentive for Major League Baseball will be keep him in the game. His world presence is incredible. Of course, he's a star from Japan. And every incentive is going to point towards don't give Shohei Ohtani the treatment of Pete Rose. It will not be. If it's discovered that Shohei Ohtani was betting on baseball, he gets a year-long suspension. If he bets on baseball game that he was involved in, lifetime ban. And I think we're going to have to watch Major League Baseball in this investigation. I think it is incumbent upon, quite honestly, one of the least trusted institutions in our society, journalism, to look into this story. Because I don't know that Major League Baseball can be trusted to find the incentive to arrive at the truth when it comes to this story with Ohtani.
Will Cain, you can watch him on Fox and Friends weekends on the Fox News Channel, and you can hear him Monday through Thursday, The Will Cain Show. Will, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Meet the American who
made the first moon landing possible. Margaret Elaine Hamilton was born August 17th, 1936, in Pawley, Indiana, and always had a passion for breaking barriers. She studied mathematics and philosophy at Earlham College in Richmond, Indiana, just a few hours away from her hometown. Upon graduating, she found a job at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where she helped develop military defense systems, all while funding her then-husband James Hamilton's law school tuition. At the age of 29, she became the head of MIT's Instrumentation Laboratory Software Engineering Division. After then-President John F. Kennedy announced the country's mission to put a man on the moon, NASA searched for someone who could create the software to accomplish the goal. Hamilton was summoned for the task, and with her four-year-old daughter, Lauren, by her side in the lab, she began writing the code that would facilitate one of the greatest feats of humankind. She pioneered asynchronous software, or the ability of a program to handle multiple functions at the same time. Hamilton's software, primitive by today's standards, even wound up saving the Apollo 11 mission from a potential disaster, as it was able to compensate for a mistake on the checklist that led lunar module pilot Edwin Buzz Aldrin to hit a wrong button just minutes before they touched down on the moon. Her ingenuity powered the next five moon landings. Many were unaware of her indispensable contributions to modern software design until 30 years later, when NASA uncovered the photo of Hamilton standing next to a large stack of programming documents from Apollo 11. An image went viral on social media and inspired the animated children's book, Margaret and the Moon, in 2017. Hamilton was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Barack Obama and was later inducted into the National Aviation Hall of Fame. Margaret Hamilton is now 87 years old and is the CEO of Hamilton Industries, where her innovations remain the basis for software engineering and software space exploration. For more true life stories about great Americans, go to the lifestyle page of foxnews.com.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. For a time, newlywed Amy Ballin felt as though she were living in a fairy tale. But one night, her life turned into a nightmare. After being physically attacked by her husband, Amy ended up behind bars. This week, Amy Ballin joins me to discuss how she fought for her innocence and why she continues to advocate for other survivors today. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and foxnewspodcasts.com.
Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Joe Concha.
What's on your mind?
A mass mutiny at NBC News and MSNBC shows that children are running the childcare over at 30 Rock.
I'm not sure if Cesar Conde, he is the president of NBC News, understands exactly what this means as far as the firing of Rona McDaniel, who only lasted exactly 2 days over at NBC News after she was called a threat to democracy on the air by its anchors and hosts alike. I'm not sure Conde understands what this means because the news division, if you want to call it that, moving forward, may have some trouble speaking to some Republicans these days. There's a report in Semaphore about NBC News journalists being concerned that the Republican sources on the Hill have been damaged to the point that said sources may never speak off the record as freely as they have before ever again. As it stands now, NBC should never host another debate again. That's my opinion. Because if this is the view they have around any Republican who isn't a staunch never-Trumper, think Lincoln Project meets any conservative on The View, the kind of so-called Republicans that somehow only root for Democrats, then how could they ever trust a news division that has a patent disdain for the party and roughly half the voters in this country? Remember, Bret Baier, Martha McCallum, they host Democratic town halls and segments featuring prominent Democrats. They come on with both of them because they know they're going to get tough but fair questions. I'll leave it here. Remember, it was Kristen Welker who hosted a presidential debate in 2020 who began this on-air mutiny on Sunday when she told viewers, quote, "I was not involved in her hiring," unquote, her hiring as McDaniels. That led to Chuck Todd, insufferable Chuck Todd, being the poster boy for insubordination and demanding on the air that his bosses apologize for the hiring. And then the avalanche on MSNBC followed from Rachel Maddow, Joe Scarborough, Mika Brzezinski, Nicole Wallace, where you half expected the janitors at 30 Rock to jump on the air and also denounce this hiring at some point. So NBC, MSNBC may be celebrating this as a win, but they officially just declared that diversity of thought is dead at 30 Rock. Good luck with that. I'm Joe Concha.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. In these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.